Hey, it's Finn, and if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show, brought to you by Dr. Pepper and Hooters, your home to watch all the college game day action with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper.
College football, I need you to be a lot less like all the other pro sports today. Yes, all the other pro sports. I don't know. I turn on the TV and I see, by the way, I told you it is a creepy commercial, but when I turn on the TV and I see Bryce Young trying to sell me Dr. Pepper, like he took over that kid's family. That's creepy. But it's pro stuff now. It's professional. He's getting paid and I rock on, man. Get paid. But it's pro sports. And when I say I need you to be a little less like the other pro sports today, this is what, even though there are some fans, we're on in Lexington, that don't like this headline, it's still a headline based around on-field or at least off-field roster-wise. And what are we going to do at quarterback? Headline, Kentucky quarterback Levis to enter the draft, decide on bowl game. My opinion would be a quarterback who said, yeah, I'm leaving after this year, I'm going to enter the draft. My opinion is that guy normally doesn't play in the bowl game. Will Levis, who knows? It has not been an equal, like a level field for him this year to display his wares. He's been hurt. They hadn't protected. He hasn't been good at times. It is on him. But it's been an up and down season and way too many turnovers, which is what I said. I don't know anything about playing quarterback. But this, like all offseason, I was like, what? I was in Las Vegas for the NFL draft. It was fantastic out there. The day after the draft, Will Levis, 2023 top 10 pick. I was like, what? I watched Will Levis every game, I think, in 21. When they said Will Levis and Anthony Richardson as well, I was like, well, he just hadn't played. So we'll find out about him. But Will Levis, I had an opinion. Anthony Richardson, I was like, I don't know about him. Will Levis, I was like, I think I know about him. He turns the ball over too much. Did it again this year. And again, layers to the onion when it comes to Will Levis. But he turned the ball over a lot. And I can't have it. You got to figure it out somehow. Had 13 picks last year. He had 10 this year. And he threw the ball a lot less this year. So there's that. Physically, it's all there, and he can run, and he's got a strong arm, and he's tall enough. He's a lot taller than Bryce. So this is the way ESPN, and this is Alex Scarborough. He's a reasonable guy. He's not saying this is a good idea, but he's just trying to report what's accurate. Alex Scarborough, ESPN, Kentucky quarterback Will Levis, a potential top five pick. What? How'd that? And again, that's not Alex Scarborough NFL draft preview. It's Alex Scarborough. I'm just writing a story. Talking to other people. Hey, I'm writing this Levis story. Where might he be drafted? Oh, top five. Huh? So that's Will Levis. So at least I don't know, it's a great decision, but it's a decision, and he's a quarterback, and he can do it. And so we talk about Levis is going to the league. Is that good for him? And who's going to draft him? And what will Mark Stoops do? All of that sports stuff. The headline is Rose Bowl OK's new deal for 12-team playoff. What's going to happen is the Rose Bowl decided to play ball. Okay, the headline is the Rose Bowl says, yes, we will adjust our settings to end our current contracts with conferences before the agreed upon term. We will end those contracts early so that the playoffs can expand early. So we have playoff bids go out, four of them go out this Sunday. A year from right now, four more bids will go out. As far as we know, no more December morning with four more bids. There may be 12. So that's going to happen. Now, that's a football headline. And when I say the headline is Rose Bowl OK's new deal, nah, here's the headline. Rose Bowl got over itself. There's your headline. We have this habit of picking a mark in time that we like to say is that this is, we need to go back to how it was. And it's almost a declaration of we need to go back to how it was from the beginning when it was the way it was supposed to be. And like we want to go back to how it's always been. There's an issue with that. Most of the time when we go back to how it's always been, do you know what we're talking about? We want to go back to how it's always been since I've been paying attention. Like since I was born or since I was old enough. I was talking Steve Spurrier with someone earlier this week. And I said, I love the classic look of the orange helmets, orange jerseys, white pants. Do you know one thing Spurrier did when he came back? Traditionally, they had blue jerseys. He brought back blue jerseys. Charlie Pell had said, orange jerseys, let's wear them. And I liked them. And so my point of reference included a whole lot of orange helmet, orange jerseys, white pants. They should go back the way it always was. Well, it wasn't. When Spurrier played, he ran out of tunnel, blue jersey on. There are various states, and I swear, we certainly never go anyplace like this on this show. It's almost comical, but I'm going to reference it. Various states have debates, fights over state flags. History, the heritage of art. We need to go back to how it was before all of this discourse. But it's not going back to how it was when you first got statehood. Here was the flag. If you'll notice, we need to go back to how it always was. It always was once this political statement was made, whatever it was. We need the original flag. During these 41 years. Well, there's four flags. No, I'm not talking about those original flags. I'm talking about the original flag that I want. The quote original. We always do that. The Rose Bowl, when I say they got over themselves. Oh, yeah, I know what Chuck's talking about. They got over themselves. No more Pac 10, 12 versus the Big Ten. No more of that. No more of that. They finally got it because history, the heritage of the Rose Bowl, it's very important. We're the granddaddy of them all, and we're different than their boy dripping with attitude. And I'm going to tell you, the Rose Bowl, it's out there. They know, yeah, we don't stink. They're really, it's like they're very much into it. The grand nature of what the Rose Bowl represents and that we have to preserve the history of this game. Notre Dame played in it. Alabama played in it. Pitt played in it. Georgia Tech, Tulane, Columbia, Southern Methodist, Duke, Tennessee, Nebraska, Georgia. It has not always been the Pacific Conference and the Big Conference. It hasn't been. I just gave you matchups. And by the way, I went year by year and didn't skip anybody. If you go back to the beginning of the Rose Bowl, the first one was Stanford, Michigan. Do you know what the second one was? Washington State and Brown. And then Penn. And then Harvard. And then Washington and Jefferson. And then Navy. And then Notre Dame. Folks, first 40 years, come one, come all. We need to make sure we preserve the history of the Rose Bowl, the history that I choose that starts after World War II. The way it's always been since I was paying attention. So the Rose Bowl has finally gotten over itself, and they acknowledge that, hey, wait a minute, didn't Oklahoma and Washington State play out there? Didn't Nebraska and Miami play? You've already, if this is the word you want to use, and if you want to talk about the sanctity of how it's always been since about the late 40s, if you want to talk about the Rose Bowl and what we're giving up, we all just kind of look the other way when Miami and Nebraska are out there, right, I guess? Or when they that year they played the Rose Bowl in Miami? Iowa and USC played in Miami the same year that Miami and Nebraska played. And like the Rose Bowl was in Miami. The Orange Bowl got played in Pasadena. College football has already corrupted, if that's your word, already corrupted the Rose Bowl. And anything that has to do with the history, the heritage, because I'm sorry, I don't find like the Utah-Penn State matchup in history. And those are teams in both these conferences now. So that's what it is. Yeah, TCU played in your game like a decade ago. So it's now just formal. And when I say they got over themselves, they have pulled down the veil of we have these traditional matchups that we decided to have a few decades sooner than like the Sugar Bowl said we're taking the – that's all it is. Somebody decided, and then they've done it for a little longer than others. But the truth is, while the stadium is unbelievable, the setting, all the field, somehow it's still grass and paint. Their field looks better somehow. It's literally – you go to Five Guys, it's a potato. How is their potato better? It is the simplest of all ingredients, and it's the same ingredient you get at a Burger King or a Hardee's or whatever. Sometimes they take the same thing, turn it into something better. Rose Bowl, everything about it has been – it's just better. And now they'll be fully integrated and included.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 56 sticks. Appreciate everybody putting that blessing in my life. Back 100 million years ago when I coached high school football, we wanted to practice on Thanksgiving because that means that you had a game the next night and you were in the playoffs. We want to practice on Thanksgiving. In college, you want to win the national championship, but you want a 13th game. You want a 13th game. Well, South Carolina, I would have talked about the possibilities of a 13th game or not back in summer. Well, there's a 13th game, and it's going to be a really good one. And there's still blue sky for the program. Following 31-30 win over Clemson this past weekend, they have concluded the regular season, and what a great year it was. I want to welcome on head coach of the Gamecocks. It is Shane Beamer. Coach, welcome back, brother. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So the past 2 weeks, over the course of 8 days, you beat the number 5 team and the number 8 team. That's not nothing. Talk about the bounce back from Gainesville because it was dramatic. And, I mean, these are two signature wins, and it was real, man, both weeks.
Yeah, no, it was. It's a pretty remarkable 2 weeks from, you know, we stunk it up in Gainesville a few weeks ago and told our team in the locker room after the game that, you know, we got to learn from this one and put it behind us because we got an opportunity. I know you're only supposed to talk about the very next one, but I talked big picture and I told them that these next two games with Tennessee and Clemson, we have a chance to completely change everything about this program going forward. And I knew we had a good team with good players. We didn't show it that night against Florida, but our team is very resilient, very mentally tough. They came right back to work the day after the Florida game and had a great week of practice and played great, to say the least, the last 2 weeks.
All right, well, we're running like a business meeting. Let's cover old business. How did Spence Rattler make the big turnaround, the big bounce these past two games? Because he in particular was somebody that came in with a lot of individual expectations from others. And until the past 2 weeks, it hadn't been, you know, at the level that, you know, we had placed those expectations on. He was just scintillating the past two games.
Yeah, he played great. I'll be honest with you, it wasn't that far off from what I had seen in practice from him. You know, and I know on Saturdays he'll be the first to tell you that what was happening on Saturdays wasn't his best and wasn't our best as a team. But he continued to practice great. He continued to work hard and, you know, really all came together against Tennessee. And he didn't play bad against Florida. I mean, he played okay. And problem against Florida is the first three times we we touched the ball in the second half. We turned the ball over after completions as well. So he just continued to work, and he did a great job of playing with confidence and a great job of just getting the ball out of his hands and allowing his wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs to make plays the last couple of weeks.
All right, so the regular season's complete, and y'all get to exhale for a little bit. What's the two deep look like as far as dings, banged up, flat-out injuries? Anybody who we may see make an appearance in the bowl game that maybe has been sketchy, spotty the past couple weeks?
No, we're really in a pretty good position. You know, we dealt with a lot of injuries kind of in the middle of the year, towards the end of the year. We didn't have Marshawn Lloyd, our running back, against Tennessee or Florida, and or the second half against Missouri, and that certainly hurt us. We got Marshawn back against Clemson. And really, to be honest with you, we're in a good position health-wise. So credit, you know, our strength program, training room, nutrition, everybody, they've done a great job with our players where we can be in as good a position as we can be as we go into the bowl game.
Do you have any sort of timeline in mind I wasn't expecting to ask this, but Spence Rattler can turn pro if he wants. Do you have any sort of timeline in mind about you, when you and he would have that conversation, maybe determine something?
Yeah, we've already met. Certainly, you know, the schedule this year is a little bit different from a recruiting standpoint. Normally you play that game on Saturday against Clemson like we did, and then every year that I've been in coaching, you've been able to go out on the road recruiting literally the very next day until this year. This year, the calendar's a little bit different, so we actually aren't able to get on the road recruiting until tomorrow. So I took Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday this week to meet with a bunch of our individual players just about their, you know, futures and kind of where they are on things. And Spencer and I had a good meeting on Monday. You know, we'll keep that between he and I, but he hasn't made any decisions yet. He has a decision to make, certainly, but right now, his entire focus is on, we got final exams coming up next week, and then getting ready to go play in this bowl game. And we'll help him make a uniform decision along with our other guys and do what's best for them going forward.
I apologize if I missed it. Has he said he will play in the bowl game?
I don't know if he's announced it. I think right now that's his plan right now.
Okay.
And I don't want to speak for him. We got a lot of guys that have decisions to make, but we got a bunch of guys on this team. No one at this point has told me they're not playing in the bowl game. Nobody on our team has. And they got time. We don't start bowl practices here for a couple weeks. So I wanted everybody to be able to decompress a little bit from the end of the regular season, and then we'll get back together here in a couple weeks and get ready to go try and win a ninth game with everyone on board.
Wrapping up with South Carolina head coach Shane Beamer, and if you don't want to replace coaches, well, you can go 3-9. But you went 8-4, and so now you got to replace an OC. What is your where are you? What are your priorities? What are you looking for? Do you have a timeline?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you'd like to get it done quickly, just from a recruiting standpoint and whatnot, but I'm not going to rush it. I'm going to make sure I take my time on this. It's certainly a very favorable position right now. My phone is dinging like crazy with people that are interested in coming here to be a part of what we're doing here at Carolina, which is exciting. So I'm going to take my time, but certainly want to have some urgency to it. And we've got a really good thing going on here at Carolina. We certainly need to be better and more consistent offensively. So, looking for a guy that can come in here and continue to just, one, fit in with our culture, players and coaches and staff, but then also can take this offense to another level and at the same time help take this program to a higher level.
All right, it's funny. Last thing I'll let you run. I saw you going chest out defending your punter today. On Monday, I was like, my gosh, all the storylines, and I don't hear anything about Kai Kroger and his performance against Clemson. There are some times I've watched him this year, like if you let him walk down the field and put the ball down on the four or the six, whatever, he is amazing. What a great season he had.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I'm still perplexed by the fact that he's not a finalist for that award. It's ridiculous. It really is. And that's not a biased head coach. That's a college football head coach that looks at the best punters and is crazy. No disrespect to any of those other guys. I mean, Bakai's fantastic. He is a weapon. You saw against Georgia, he can throw the football. He threw a touchdown pass on a fake punt against Florida. He threw a touchdown pass on a fake punt last year against Tennessee. He does a great job as our holder. I mean, he's just a great athlete, but an absolute weapon for us as a punter, and he was huge in that Clemson game the other day, controlling field position.
Gamecocks heading to Nashville, maybe Gator Bowl, nothing but right answers for him. Coach, thank you for your time today.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
Shane Beamer, head coach, South Carolina, 8-4, 7-5 last year. And one of the stories, no, that's not a story, one of the conversations this summer, I had it. South Carolina, you're supposed to be better. And when you go from old man with a walker playing quarterback to this guy, all right, you're supposed to be better. And Marshawn will be healthy. And the kid from Wake Forest is here. And the wide receivers, they're all huge. Look at them. All of these reasons and Pickens, and they're all 50 reasons they're supposed to be better. And I looked at the schedule, and I was looking at the Georgia game, and they took it upside the head on that one. It was Georgia. They're good. I also was looking at the Texas A&M game and probably the Tennessee game, et cetera. The conversation that I was having, they went 7-5 last year. South Carolina is supposed to be better, and I believe they will. I don't know that it'll show up in the record. South Carolina was supposed to be ground zero for they're better, but you just don't know it by looking at the wins and losses. If you look at the schedule and what's ahead and blah, et cetera, then they're going to improve, but you're going to have to look for it a little bit. There are times when I asked an AD who was really supposed to be firing his head coach last December. I asked him, I was like, what did you see? Like, where's the improvement? He gave me, I'm not making this up, he gave me a real, like, extended metric about punt coverage team. And then red zone defense. I was like, both those are great. What about the wins and losses? And what about something a little more tangible and obvious? Well, now you got to understand, it takes time. I thought that we would be having conversations. No, I'm going to take that back. I was telling you, I think I'll be having this conversation saying, any South Carolina fan, I know you were 7-5 and you think, well, now we're 6-6. It's going the other way. No, you're getting better, I promise you. I thought I would be the defender. I thought I would be the guy swearing, no, trust me. It really is. What he said against South, what Shane Beamer said about his quarterback versus the Gators, he's like, folks, he was right there. It was really close. And then against Tennessee, oh, wow, now we see it. Clemson, same thing. You can be that way as a team. You can be a version of that as a team. And I was expecting that to be the case. Won't win as many games, but they are moving down the road in the right direction. Well, Shane's like, all right, well, we'll do both of them. We'll improve, and you'll be able to see it in the record. And we're not going to a game in Birmingham again. Not going to the bowl game there. We're going to a bowl game somewhere in Florida, maybe in Nashville. And they really could reach kind of even a little bit above the Gator Bowl, maybe, depending. So we're going to take a quick break. And again, rolling through hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Thursday.
Hey, it's Finn. And if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and we've got ball games tomorrow night for conference championships. And there is a distinction that if you go way, way, getting the DeLorean all the way back to 1985, 85 Oklahoma Sooners, the last time a team had the number one ranked defense nationally, scoring defense, rushing defense, passing defense, total defense. Like, you're supposed to have something. Like, you know, where you beat everybody, so everybody throws the ball, so it skews your passing numbers. No, Oklahoma was really good, and they were number one. That's the most recent time a college defense has done that. I got news for you, folks. For all the excitement about Caleb Williams, and I think he's the Heisman winner and all that, do we realize Utah has done a mini version of that in the Pac-12? They lead the Pac-12 in defense in the four categories. That it doesn't happen these days. Does it, Utah? They've already beat Southern Cal. This is an amazing matchup tomorrow night. Want to bring on guy who is the owner and publisher, USCFootball.com. I'm going to call him a friend of the program. It's Ryan Abraham. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, excited for some Vegas action, college football. I love that the Pac-12 moved the championship game to Vegas. I went there last year for Oregon. Utah was a lot of fun, and that should be a lot of fun for Utah and USC.
Now, the other side of this is, oh, no, Caleb, and they're going to win. They've got a Heisman, and he's a great quarterback in Lincoln Riley. I'm like, every word you just kind of stumbled through is true. However, Utah is a really great opponent who can upset all of this entering the game. Just talk from a traditional standpoint, two deep injuries. How is USC in your mind ahead of tomorrow night's ball game?
Yeah, it's funny coming out of that USC Utah game was 6 weeks ago, October 15th, both teams got really banged up. If you remember, Cam Rising didn't play against Washington State after a bye week
for
Utah, and Kyle Willingham didn't even announce it. And USC lost Jordan Addison and their best receiver, and Eric Gentry, their best linebacker, and had some other guys out after that too. But the good thing for USC is that a lot of those guys have been back. We saw Addison have a huge game against UCLA. Eric Gentry was back fully last week against Notre Dame and led the team in tackles. And I'm not sure on the Utah side of the ball where, you know, Cam Rising's still been banged up. He hasn't looked the same since he had that great outing against USC. And the same thing with Dalton Kincaid, the tight end that went absolutely ham against USC, career numbers with 16 catches and 234 yards against the Trojans. Those guys are probably a little bit banged up, but I like the way USC is playing right now to come off two wins over their rivals. I think it's a big deal, and they just seem to be taking care of business, Chuck. But this is a Utah team that's really well coached. You know, when they're the underdog, they do really well, and I think it's one of those things where USC is going to have to come out and play a really good game to get a win. It's hard to beat a team twice in one season. I know USC has, like, revenge on their mind, but they're going to have to play well against Utah because you know the Utes are going to come in and give them a really tough game.
Yeah, I mentioned Cam Rising, and he's one of those guys that, you know, you watch Caleb, for instance, and you can watch a snapshot of, like, four-minute possession, and you're like, damn. I think Cam is one of those guys you need to watch, like, over the course of her season. You're like, I really, really like him. What a tough kid and a leader and all that other stuff. Having said all that, the USC defense, it's weird. Ton of sacks, ton of picks, ton of huge plays given up. Talk about the matchup and if Cam Rising is a guy who can take advantage of it.
He really torched USC, you know, especially taking off on the ground last year. I mean, besides finding Dalton Kincaid open all over the place, they did a really nice job of running after contact. You know, when Kincaid could catch the ball, he'd run afterwards. And Cam Rising, too. He would take off and run that two-point conversion to win the game. That was him just getting the snap and then running it himself. So I think that's one of those things you have to try to limit. And for USC, it's been very opportunistic defense. They've given up a lot of big plays, a bunch of yards, but they're leading the nation in turnover margin. It helps that the USC offense isn't turning the ball over. But I think against Cam Rising, they're going to have to try to limit what he's doing, at least on the ground. And they've done a pretty nice job of that the last couple weeks where, you know, Zach Charbonnet for UCLA had come in getting 150 yards in the last four games, and then USC held them under 100. And Notre Dame was a big rushing team. That's what they want to do. And USC held them to 90 yards rushing total. So I think trying to take away an opponent's fastball is something this defense has been pretty good at lately. Yeah. They'll give up, you know, they're hitting their changeup well, they're hitting their curve well, but at least you could take away the fastball. And I think if they can do that and make Cam Rising try to beat you, maybe just with his arm, as opposed to taking off and run and maybe not allowing Kincaid to go off. I think that will help them. And then obviously getting turnovers, which they've been really good at all year, has helped as well. But if they can limit what Utah wants to do, at least you try to make them beat you in a way they don't feel comfortable.
All right. I had seen a note. It was an asterisk. Big note. Read this. Caleb Williams, season rushing total, 351 yards. I'm like, well, okay. I just watched Cam Newton lead the SEC in rushing as a quarterback. I was like, that's pretty good. Then I read the note below it. It's the most, quote, since complete records have been kept at USC. So as far as they've been playing football for like 120 years, and Caleb is the leading rusher among all quarterbacks ever. Talk about that part of his game, because, again, this could be a guy who wins the Heisman a week from Saturday.
Yeah, he's been able to do it, kind of quietly. And I think he had 68 yards, I believe, against Rice in the opener, and that was the most on record that we could find, at least in the last several decades, of a USC quarterback, the most rushing yards that they've had. His 44 combined touchdowns is the most a quarterback has had. I think it was 42 was the tie, like Cody Kessler, and it might have been Matt Barkley. But, you know, he's doing it in a different way, you know, having three rushing touchdowns against Notre Dame last week. But he's not someone that wants to go back there and try to run the ball. And he's talked about this, too, that sometimes – it's a balance where he wants to be in the pocket as much as possible. And sometimes the coaches have to say, hey, if it's there, take off and run. And sometimes it's just him being, you know, an improv expert in the backfield, where just things break down and he takes off and scrambles and gets away from the rush and then maybe finds someone downfield, or maybe takes off and runs himself. But that's definitely been a dynamic aspect of this game. We just haven't seen that much. Like a guy like Sam Darnold did it some, but Caleb Williams, it can be like a regular part of his game, even though that's really not something he's been focusing on. But, yeah, to have the amount of touchdowns, the amount of rushing yards, we just haven't seen that from a USC quarterback, and, you know, as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I shouldn't have had expectations for Brad Auden. All right, let's wrap this up. They're going to be the four seed, in my estimation, and I just think it's fabulous. It's as big a brand, if you care about that. USC's as big a brand as there is in college football. It's in that group, but this is a really good team as well. Is there a conversation about the enormous nature of this bounce back that – the Pac-12 hadn't been represented in like 6-7 years, and it could be in the first year under Lincoln Riley. Like, all of this seems to have worked.
Yeah, it's funny. And if you're the Pac-12, I mean, George Kliavkoff focused on trying to get a team to the college football playoff. I think he would rather have been Utah or Oregon or Washington, not a USC or UCLA, who's leaving the conference in a year or so. But I think it's important for the conference. It's important for USC. You mentioned all the tradition and the brand. They've never made the college football playoff. No. You know, having Clay Helton as your head coach, you're probably not going to be a playoff team. And you expected this team to turn things around when you make a huge hire like Lincoln Riley. You don't expect it in year one. And I think it just shows all USC needed was a good coach. If you just get a good coach, things are going to go well. They've avoided that for many, many years. So now you get one, and these are the results. Just get someone good, and you will be a nationally relevant program again, which they just haven't been, Chuck, for so long. So it's a big deal, I think, for the conference. It's a big deal for USC. And even if they get smoked by Georgia, just to go to your very first playoff in the first year of Lincoln Riley just shows how much, you know, how far this program's come in a short amount of time, and then what the potential for this program to be, a recruiting class or two or another transfer class or whatever, and you can be, someone that's competing for a championship. This year, I don't think they will. But just to make the playoff would be a really big deal.
Last thing for Ryan Abraham on Twitter, Inside Troy. It's USCFootball.com. It's him. He's the owner. He's the publisher. What do you think the crowd will look like? And I want to ask you, are you tired of that? Are folks who cover USC or Pac-12 in general, are you tired about questions about, hey, what will the crowd look like?
No, I mean, it's a thing, especially in L.A. I mean, it's a deal here. But they had a really good crowd for the Notre Dame game. I was at the first – Pac-12 championship in Las Vegas last year, and it was a Utah. I mean, it was Utah takeover. It was full, but it was mostly Utah fans. And I think it's going to be more of a split thing. But I feel they're going to fill it up again. It's been a really good venue. A lot of people want to come to Las Vegas. It's not a hard, you know, it's not a hard place to get to, and it's about equally distant between Salt Lake City and Vegas and LA and Vegas. So I think you're going to see a really good crowd there. But, you know, I think people are excited to try to get a Pac-12 championship again and maybe make the college football playoffs, see a Heisman winner and all that. So I think you're going to see a bunch of USC fans and Utah fans make it to Vegas.
All right, folks, I promise if USC is playing in SoFi in the national championship game, we will have Ryan back on. Appreciate your time today, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
Ryan Abraham, today's truest reporter. And the national championship's in L.A., right? Yeah. USC is in L.A. Imagine going down the street. Georgia played in Atlanta for a national championship. Folks, that's an hour. Now, it's an hour. It's not, you know, like the San Francisco 49ers played a national championship, a Super Bowl in Palo Alto, like at Stanford Stadium. It blows your mind. It was the 80s. They put Super Bowls weird places. And so that was pretty close to the closest you were going to have to a home team winning your Super Bowl. And since then, we've had even more than that, obviously. But USC playing the national championship game there. I mean, Miami playing in the Orange Bowl for the national championship. LSU playing Clemson in New Orleans. Sometimes it comes around. Even like Ohio State. Did they beat Oregon in Indianapolis or Dallas?
Dallas.
Dallas, that's right. But playing in Indianapolis, that's close. It's easy. It's not a, quote, home game. Like Ohio State playing in Columbus, that's a home game. So it would just be a really neat dynamic. And so maybe that will occur. Brad Oden, by the way, he was just a random quarterback from like the mid to late 90s. And USC, it blows my mind. Everybody who's been playing football for 100 and something years, especially if you were playing before the pass was legalized, well, you didn't really have quarterbacks, you had halfbacks. So you should have had a quarterback go for more than 350. How do you not have a quarterback go for more than 350? Caleb Williams has done it. And so maybe he becomes the next Heisman Trophy winner. Man, quarterback, the resume at USC for quarterbacks, and he's on that list now. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back, wrap up on this Thursday next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Kirby's just kind of like, listen, dude, this is how we're going to do things. You know, we're going to practice hard. We're going to be physical. We're going to be tough. Like, you're going to get what you're going to get, but you got to go earn it. And I think it served him really well. And I think that's where Georgia's at where they're at.
ESPN analyst.
Got run over by a reindeer.
Dave Pollock. He's on with Jocks. Was that Jocks? No, Jocks in Birmingham. You can say and I agree with his summary there. And he didn't jump. Kirby didn't. Now, maybe he was waiting for just his one perfect job, and it's his alma mater. There are all kinds of coaches who wait a little bit, and then they take a job that's not at their alma mater. Didn't Jeff Lebby go to Oklahoma? So there's a chance that, like, he wants to be the head coach there, but he's OC there, and so that's enough. But so maybe he was just waiting. I think Kirby was not just waiting for the Georgia job. I think Kirby was just kind of waiting. He knew it was going to happen. You know what? So I don't have to take San Jose State. So he was on Jocks. Again, in Birmingham, and he certainly knows how to run a program, man. And it happened so dang quickly. And that is the one thing that there just is no short – the one aspect of a team that I just marveled at with Kirby. Now, I'm going to say A-minus, A, maybe even a little higher than that. The Georgia offensive line, he got it turned around from – really below Georgia's standards and probably a pretty average SEC line. Georgia's standards are above SEC normal standards. They are. Missouri, we need to be SEC at every position. Georgia's like, no, we need to be Minnesota Vikings at every position. So their standards are different. Kirby got the offensive line to a Georgia standard almost immediately, which just blew my mind because it wasn't even transfer portal. It was like recruits and kids are already there, and he already took a shot at him. We talked about this. I got too many little guys. That was Kirby the day he got introduced. Hey, I'm Kirby. I'm glad to be home. Boy, we got little guys. He said that in his press conference. We got too many little guys. And then 15 minutes later, all right, the offensive line's fixed-ish on the way. Took a defensive line. Didn't Lamont Gilliard play D-tackle and suddenly he's a center on an SEC champion? I was amazed. He took the guys that were already there and then some recruits, and I want to say there was a transfer, Tyler Catalina. Did that? He start for Rick or Kirby? He started Kirby's first year, didn't he?
Yeah, left tackle.
That's right. Tyler Catalina was from Rhode Island. I'm going to sit that from now. He started in the SEC. I mean, he was the left tackle for a good enough SEC team for an entire season. I never did anything like that. A left tackle from Rhode Island started at Georgia for Kirby. It shows you where you are now. And there is no – so he kind of patched it together, and that was an – remember, if you transfer down, you could play immediately, or you were a grad, you could play immediately. So he went to Rhode Island and got a left tackle. Now he goes to IMG or the Army game in San Antonio. It's just the offensive line because – and here are the reasons. Even though you play five or six, or Mike Leach wants eight or nine or ten, you play a bunch of wide receivers, you don't have five starting wide receivers. You have five starting offensive linemen, and I'm saying at the very least, because some teams treat a tight end that way if you use a tight end. Some teams actually use a running back to really – some teams make a priority of it, but you start five. That's roughly 25% of your entire starting lineup, both sides of the ball. So if it's that huge a portion, there is less of a quick fix. You know what you have when you're Western Kentucky and you bring in Bailey Zappi? We got a passing game. Like, he's one dude. One guy. Let's throw it. That's not how it works with the offensive line. There was a kid coming out. I'm going to try to remember. Maybe was it Calvin Anderson? There was this big, giant, all-conference USA tackle coming out of Rice. And he transferred to Texas. And you know what that did for Texas? It helped him. All right, what about the other four spots? Because I don't have to beat you at all five spots. I have to beat you at one spot. And if I beat you at one spot, well, you're cooked. So it takes a lot to turn around an offensive line. Kirby walked in, like, laid hands on it, sprinkled some fairy dust on it, opened the envelope. Look, it's a B-minus offensive line. And then it's gotten a little better. They've had first-round draft picks, like a lot of them. This year, Dan, they haven't won the Joe Moore Award with him there yet, have they? I think they may this year. Like, they're nominated.
Yeah, Michigan got it last year. That was the only other one that I would have thought.
Yeah, it just – man, it's amazing. When you turn around an offensive line, it takes more to do that. Marshall got Randy Moss. Guess what they had? A great receiving core. He's one guy. Nope, we got a great receiving core. Why? Randy. So there's just no way. There's too many guys involved, and I only have to beat you at one spot. Dan, how is your Thursday? Get yourself into a Hooters. I do want to say, get yourself into a Hooters and try to get tickets to a semifinal game. All you got to do is enter on your phone. If you hashtag out Dr. Pepper and Hootersville, then you're drinking a Dr. Pepper. You get another entrant. Again, giving it away just a couple of weeks for the end of the month, the semifinal game in Atlanta. Somebody, one of our listeners from Jackson, Mississippi, is in town for the SEC title game, courtesy of Dr. Pepper and Hooters. Now we're doing it for the semifinal. Same thing.
10 original, mild, please, with ranch. Oh, no blue cheese. Yeah. That's how I go. And then curly fries, please, as well. All of those things, please send them my way. It's funny, you mentioned earlier about the Rose Bowl. You know what the Rose Bowl is, right? They are college football's version of Augusta National. They are ties, in some cases bow ties. Very much, that's not how we do things around here. All of these different things. It's the tradition. It's the pageantry. It's everything that's supposed to be the parade. So, yeah, there was quite a bit to get over. This is going to be unpopular for me. While the Rose Bowl atmosphere is awesome, I mean, the fact that it's in the middle of a neighborhood, then you step out of a neighborhood and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, where'd this huge park just come from with a massive bridge right there, a golf course, all these different things, the mountains. I mean, this is amazing. And then the stadium itself is kind of, I wouldn't say that it's quite reached ashtray status, but let's just say that new age infrastructure and the amount of people that go in there are not conducive to it being the most efficient stadium to go to on the planet.
Oh, it's Roman Coliseum.
It is.
Like, it's really, really old historical, and it's really, really old.
You go get a beer, you better put the game on your phone and get used to the crowd being way ahead of the action that you're going to have on your phone, because it is going to take you a few minutes to get back up to your seats. Yeah, you were right about Georgia, too. They have not won the Joe Moore Award, and, you know...
I think they're nominated this year, though.
I think they are. I think they are. But, you know, one thing, though, you talked about this a couple of days ago, and we played the cut from Dabo Swinney, and I immediately started to think about it, and I talked about this on the most recent episode of the Southern Beat, is Dabo is playing a dangerous game there, because we've said before, don't ever resume check people. When you resume check people, you are telling them, I'm insecure about the job that I do. He doesn't need to do that. I think that the other thing he needs to be worried about here is coaches can fire themselves. Like, Dabo's success down the road could be the reason why he's fired. Are we aware that Mark Richt fired himself at Georgia? Because he won 10 games a year. He won a couple of SEC championships games. And then all of a sudden, the first part kept going. The second part stopped. And that's why people looked at him and said, hey, coach, that game down in Florida, yeah, we want to check that box. Getting to Atlanta and hoisting up that trophy and the confetti and everything, we want to check that box. Oh, yeah, that last part, too, the national championship, we want to do that as well. We're not doing that. So I hate to tell you, but it's time for us to move on. So, again, you can do the resume, and I'm not saying they're going to do that at Clemson anytime soon, but soon enough, the resume, people start to throw that at you.
Air Force, Illinois, Tennessee, Georgia, a couple others. Joe Moore semifinalists. Appreciate everybody getting in. Back tomorrow with more.
Hey, it's Finn, and if you've been listening to 680 for long, you know that I'm a big fan of Audi Atlanta. That's where I got my Audi Q8 e-tron, which I absolutely love. And it's the only dealership I would recommend to my friends and my family. And here's why. For one, Audi Atlanta has a great selection of luxury vehicles. They helped me find the exact SUV I was looking for, and the purchase was super easy. A fully transparent experience catered to me. The same experience they provide all their customers. And here's one more reason that makes Audi Atlanta so special. During the month of April, Audi Atlanta will make a donation to Enduring Hearts for every vehicle sold. Thanks to the efforts of Enduring Hearts, children with heart transplants are living longer and healthier lives. Get the Audi you've always wanted while supporting a great cause. To learn more about Enduring Hearts and to view our current specials, visit AudiAtlanta.com to start or complete your entire purchase online. Or shop Audi Atlanta in person, like I did, on Peachtree Boulevard just inside the perimeter. Together, we have the power to make positive changes that could last a lifetime.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.